Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Freaks and Geeks. I am joined by my hetero life mate, Carrie, and my swoon-worthy sailor, Chris.
Oh, yeah, the sultry tones are back this week, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God.
Thank God for those sultry tones.
Thank God. I don't think I can survive without it.
Hashtag make it the week.
Oh, my God.
Those caramel cords.
Oh, God. Just, we got to put them on insurance. We got to get insurance for those things.
Oh, yeah.
Well, everybody, tonight is a big night outside of the caramel cords of Chris. We also have the Soroth Lords here with us tonight, and we are freaking excited. We demoed one of their songs. That was the very first thing we played. So if you enjoyed it, then stick around and listen in.
Yeah, just total orgasm. Awesome, great classic punk music. And we want to welcome Jamie Cherry and Morgan Blank to the show.
Hey, hello. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, guys. We are so happy to have you here with us. Happy to hear voices, you know, on this side.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Hello. Hello, everyone. Big hello all around. So we have, we've been talking quite a bit with Jamie, and he has introduced us to your music. It's freaking fantastic. Although I have to say, selfishly, I'm kind of a fan of your 2015 album, Rules. My favorite is definitely Bury Me Alone, and then a close second would be Beacon of Hope.
Awesome. Bury Me Alone, actually, like, we wrote, like, or just before the day we recorded it, too, so thank you very much.
Man, that's really good. I feel like if I was a superhero, though, I would want Slow Death to be my theme music, for sure.
Thank you. It was actually, if you look it up online, there's an old 70s comic book called Slow Death, and that's kind of what inspired the concept of it, you know? You can see a lot of good covers online. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, that's okay. Believe me, we're used to it. We do it all the time. That's why we have the script.
Thank you.
But as you can see, we speak to that really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for listening to us.
That was awesome.
Are you guys out of Pittsburgh? Am I right?
No, actually, we're out of Virginia.
Oh, Virginia, awesome, man. Didn't we play down there, man?
North Carolina.
I think we played there, but we may have been a little bit off when we were playing. So I apologize to Virginia.
No, that's okay. That's all right. That just means you have to come here next.
Yeah, we'd like to. Thank you very much.
No, no problem. So would you like to tell us a little bit about the band and how you guys get started before we kind of get into it?
Well, we're Frost Lords. You know, we actually started in 2010. We're a three-piece right now, and we play crazy punk rock with sci-fi and fantasy themes, getting crazy and getting wild.
Yeah, we started in Detroit maybe, I can't remember how many years ago, and in a great place, a famous place near the old train station, and actually there's a lot of paranormal aspects about that place itself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was called SiteRight Optical Studios, but it's in modern times it's called Bagley Vision. And actually, at one point, there was a fire there in which, like, 50 people were killed.
Wow.
And I lived there for about 10 years, and I'll tell you, it was very paranormal, let me just say. And then, actually, in the alleyway next to it, I'm sorry if I'm talking too much, Ty Cobb is supposed to have murdered somebody, actually. A famous baseball player from Detroit, Ty Cobb. I think he's legendarily supposed to have slashed a person's throat with the sight of a Luger pistol after a fight about his wife buying fish. So it's kind of like a crazy, yeah.
That sounds like Ty Cobb.
Well,
you
I'm
know Ty Cobb.
Ty Cobb is a drunk asshole.
Yeah, and they say that he was banned from Canada, and he had to go much slower route home through Ohio because he just caused too many fights and Canada banned him.
That's nuts.
I never saw the ghost of Ty Cobb there, but I there were ghosts there for sure.
What did you experience while you were there?
Well, the thing is there was experiences from day one, but there was one particular room where you would definitely, if you stood there, you would feel something watching you. And
it was really creepy.
Yeah, actually, that's where I met Jamie, as a matter of fact, at the building. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, like, every time you go there, it's just very creepy, kind of just like someone's watching you, but no one's there, very, very eerie.
But for me, in a good way, I enjoyed it, so that's what we named the band after.
Oh, yeah, How's that?
Well, Sight Right Optical Studios, there was like old stationery left over from probably the mid-80s. And it was Sight Right Optical, and we just had the studio because our buddy Doug had a studio there. And then the Lords was just a bit of hubris on our part, you know?
I'll roll that off the tongue.
Yeah. And technically, I had lived there for quite a while. So, I mean, I think if there was some kind of royal hierarchy, I think I would have got a lordship.
That's awesome. I had wondered about the name. I assumed that it was, like, just a word, you know? I didn't know it was an acronym. That's pretty cool.
Well, that's the cool thing about it is that anybody can pronounce it any way they want, and it's right. And you can really capitalize whatever letters you want, you know? So, just a fun word to say, you know?
Yeah. But, I actually had... So I'm teaching class in D.C. right now, and I've got about 10 students. And so today, one of their tasks was to figure out and make bets about, like, how to say it.
Yeah. And how were you teaching them?
Well, I didn't know for sure. I was like, you know, like, it could be anything. So just give me your best guesses here. And I pretty much, actually, a lot of them got it right. I was saying it Thros, which I guess is somewhat correct, but
yeah,
not quite. So I was close. No cigar though on that one.
So the kids kind of felt it then, man.
Yeah, for sure.
And did the kids that get it right? Did you suspect that they were the, you know, kids with a little something different?
No, not necessarily. So these are all adults, and they are very special to begin with. I'll say it like that, and I mean that in the least sincere form of the word. Like they're all like military professionals, so they're all very like buttoned down and smooth. Yeah.
Not all of us are that way.
Yeah.
I was kind of picturing a like kindergarten cop, like Cookie, Strossler, you know, I don't know, something.
Almost, but not quite. Yeah, it's very similar though to kindergartners, so it's not
you know,
similar.
My brother was in the military, actually, and my dad and one of my grandpas as well. So it's good that you're involved, man.
Yeah. Chris and I were both military. I was Army, and Chris was Air Force. So we're all kind of all up in it.
Are you still in there?
No, I still got 5 years left.
Okay, my dad and my grandpa were in the Air Force, and my brother was in the Army. He was in the first Army, and originally he was a tanker under Cobra Division, so his commander was Cobra Commander, man.
That's awesome.
Oh, you can't beat that.
They
always have the best boots, the tankers.
Yeah, well, when he was deployed, they actually weren't in the tank war anymore, so he was just riding around in a Humvee, man, and that's kind of paranormal in and of itself, you know?
Yeah. Yep, definitely outside the realm of what normal would be.
Exactly. He lives down in near Wayne State, which is a college in Detroit, and actually there's tons of veterans there. And we all used to drink. Well, I'm not a veteran, but he used to drink at a bar with a lot of those guys, and I'd be there too. And I'll tell you, veterans are some of the most interesting and varied people you meet, you know. Like like strange subjects. They're all about it, you know. They have no problem in that realm.
Yep.
We've seen some shit.
Yeah, we've seen some.
and I mean, it's, think about, you know, just the strangeness alone of being on patrol in Iraq, a country that
had, you know, essentially the first civilization in written, in some people's history, you know, the written world, you know, and you're driving around, you know, like, you know, and
feeling like the first, like, people walking around and they're ghosts, you know.
Yeah, and
spring in the night.
Yeah, I mean, you're, Baghdad was a city actually made by the Abbasid Caliphate that was supposed to rival Alexandria, and that's why it's built in that strange circle. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you guys are, there was a specific, it's full of circles there, you know, it's a strange city.
Yeah, no doubt, for sure. No doubt. So, Punk and the Paranormal, how do we get to this point? I mean, you guys have had some experiences, of course, but are there any specific that you want to talk about?
Well, yeah. With the punk rock, like, I'm just a straight up weirdo. So, like, punk rock and being weird is kind of normal. So it's not weird in a sense, but it's very paranormal because, I mean, all our songs are literally about, like, metaphysical, weird, religious stuff. Like, we have a song called War in Space, and that's literally about a war in space. But the cool thing is, it's the way that Morgan writes it is very, like, in the now, opposed to, like, being in, like, a fantasy realm, which the fantasy realm is Earth, which is very, very different from some other, you know, kind of fantasy stuff. And then we also have a song called The End, which is, it's an early Strauss song, and it's literally about the end of the world. It talks about seven-headed beasts and just, you know, the water turning to crazy things. It's just, it's crazy. And that all kind of fits into how we feel naturally about life. I mean, the paranormal, it's, like, hard for us to not talk about it, so it's, like, it's just very natural to even just write songs about it.
Yeah, I think I live in a paranormal reality and have tons of experiences with it, and I think they're reflected in kind of the lyrics. And also, when the band rehearses, we like to sit around and talk about the paranormal and just reality itself, which is a fun thing to do in between, practice, you know.
And just talking about it, it's kind of like its own musical spell. You know, we're creating a musical spell.
Yeah, there's definitely some songs which are definitely written like spells. I think if you research, if you look up real spells from the past, they have a kind of a rhythmic musical aspect. And even like forms of songs like the blues, like, kind of follow alarmingly similar rhyme patterns to spells and rituals of the past.
Wow, that's a really interesting way of putting that.
And what were you saying? I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Now I'm just going to geek out about the lyrics even more than I already do. And we are going to play the end.
Are you going to play it right now?
No, we're going to play it at the end because, I mean,
oh,
how much more perfect can you get?
Awesome. That one is kind of, the end is coming soon. Oh, I shouldn't spoil the lyrics. But it's kind of written with a combination of the Book of Revelation in mind, and also, like, Romero's zombie movies. And, which are, you know, just glorious. And it's an interesting song because there's actually one other verse, which I can't recall at the moment, that we had to cut, which is even more kind of shocking. So, but, just for the purpose of songwriting, we had to cut it. So we've even got, like, a hidden verse there somewhere in a notebook somewhere.
Yeah.
One day after you guys are famous, somebody will find it.
Well, I'll mail it to you, and you can have you can sell it. You know, I mean, or do whatever you need with it. Yeah, if we get famous,
more money for the radio show. Know.
Well, I'm gonna say is that if you know, I mean, all bets are off then. So you know, we'll all be drinking wine, man. Yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah,
sounds
good to
actually. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go for it. Yeah, go for it.
Oh, one thing I have to talk about that's kind of been part of my whole life was I had a friend when I was really young, and we were sitting at my computer, and underneath the computer was this old stereo, like, boombox, wasn't plugged in, had no batteries, and that was, you know, that was for the last 10 years it didn't have batteries or wasn't plugged in. Out of nowhere, me and my friend were researching the whole Paul is Dead Beatles thing, and then all of a sudden the radio comes on and starts changing channels. Not plugged in, no batteries. We like literally like I think threw the radio and like ran out of the room. It was terrifying, and I don't know how to explain it, but that has stuck with me to this day. And you know, it's the Beatles thing, and it's very weird. What's your thoughts, Morgan?
Well, I mean, I think that when it comes down to it, the entire Paul is Dead thing is essentially part of a magical spell overall. I think that the Beatles themselves were obviously well-versed in all kinds of magic. In fact, you know, John Lennon met Yoko Ono at a Process Church gallery. You know, so they were practicing magicians. They had Aleister Crowley on the cover of Sgt. Pepper's. And I as you know, I don't think Paul died until recently. I think he was simply replaced because he didn't want to do it anymore.
That would be.
But that's the type of magic that I think reality is made out of. Do you guys want me to tell you a ghost story that I had one time?
Yeah,
sure. Go.
Yeah, this one I've had. The one that makes this one fun is that it's got a witness that was there, and we still talk about it. But so a long time ago, when I was a really, really, really bad teenager, I used to skip school all the time to the point where I didn't ever go back. And me and my buddy Tim Umla, who lived down the street from me, he would skip school sometimes too. But he came over to my house one day, and I was up in my room, and it was a typical mid-90s, kind of stoner metal house, room, you know. And there were paranormal experiences abounding in that, but one of the things is that my parents used to buy Meyer Coca-Cola, a local brand, sorry, and sometimes we would have Coca-Cola, real Coca-Cola. So Tim comes over, and I say, Tim is here, let's have a party. So I go down and into the basement, and we get two real Coca-Colas. We go up to my room, right, and we're sitting around listening to music, skipping school, and I crack my Coca-Cola, which immediately has the subconscious response for Tim to crack his own. Now, the thing was is that Tim's Coca-Cola was no longer there. So we essentially took all the contents of the room because I had been suspicious in general about this house. And so we took all the contents of the room and moved them to one side of the room and searched them, right? And then we took them all the way and put them on the other side of the room and searched them again, right? And then after that, we put it all back where it already was, right? Now, that was strange enough. But Tim was short a Coca-Cola. So we go downstairs, get another Coca-Cola, come upstairs again, and boom, sitting right on the green metal folding chair that Tim had been sitting on was the Coca-Cola. And it was ridiculous. It was like a cosmic joke in some ways. So it was pretty fun, you know. And
sounds like a typical afternoon.
Yeah, it was, man. It was. Because Tim would have had to be, the Coca-Cola would have had to be up his ass, you know? I mean, I'm sorry. But
my question is, what would happen if it was a Sprite?
A Sprite? Yeah. I wish it was.
I mean,
if
we don't keep staying here, so if that's what he wants to do, then, you know,
this
we'll power to him.
Yeah. Free zone.
No, we weren't even that stoned, man. Like, this was in the days of swag weed, where the weed was bad, man. It was stems and seeds. Like, two-thirds of your weed would be garbage, and it would all be flattened out, like, because it was shipped up. Yeah, it was terrible, terrible, man. But we shouldn't talk too much about weed, am I right?
Yeah.
Just in case any kids are listening, you know.
Yeah, just keep it clean for the kids, you know.
Yeah, Morgan, did you see a UFO one time or something?
Yeah, well, I've seen several UFOs.
Ooh.
I mean, is that within the topic, man?
Yeah, it's paranormal.
Do you guys think we have time for me to tell one of the UFO stories?
Yeah, why don't you go for it?
Okay, well, one time at the same house, me and my buddy Brian Jones were leaving my house. And I'll admit, we were stoned at this point. And it was late at night, and we go out of my house, and we see directly in front of my house is my high school, which I had dropped out of. And behind that was houses, and then behind that was a golf course. And we see rising from the golf course, well, first of all, this circular aura of blue light, and then rising, and then the light shoots up from the golf course and goes into the sky, and it is now a glowing ball of light in the sky. And me and Beej had nothing to do. He probably had to go to school, but like I said, I didn't. So we followed the blue light all the way down to the Detroit River. So that was 15 miles, and we followed it on essentially green fields, kind of older roads that all had stoplights, and the thing was going very, very slow. And so we followed it, and we finally got to as close to the Detroit River as we could get, and which is a big, they call it the Detroit River, but it's essentially the border between Detroit, the waterway between Detroit and Canada. So it's pretty big. But and we see the light go off over Windsor, but we couldn't go because we didn't have time. And it was probably now 3 or 4 in the morning. So then we drive home. And Brian lived within walking distance of my house. So, and we were taking my van. It was an old Ford Aerostar. And we drive up to my house, and on the way down Midvale Road, we pass police, and they are right maybe 100 yards east of my house on Midvale Road. Basically, you know, not good. So we drive by the police very casually. We go up and we park in my driveway, and then I said, and then me and Beach, Brian, he had to walk that way anyway. That was back towards his house. So we walked by, and I think I was escorting him so he felt safe. You know, he didn't want the cops to hassle him. So we go by the police and the car. It's a police car. And they've got their windows open, and they're leaning out of the car. And they see us, and I say, hey, guys, did you see that light that was in the sky? And I was like, that's what I said to them. And they said, oh, yeah, in that big flash of light, they said, oh, yeah, that's a transformer that blew up. And, no, that's not true because I know where the transformer was. It was a different transformer. But
transformers don't keep on moving. A light doesn't keep on moving.
Optimus Prime does, but besides that, none of the other ones did that. But what I'm just saying, though, is this is a pat answer from the police, but that's what you expect. And then Brian left, and he walked back to his house, and I walked back to my house, and in the parking lot, two pickup trucks full of kids from my high school pulled in there and just started doing donuts and screaming, and the police were right there, and they did nothing, man. So it was a paranormal night, man. It was a night of high strangeness, you know?
Yeah.
Which is how it... Yeah, I think that's how most UFO experiences go, you know?
Yeah, aliens.
Yep, this is always the best kind of light night, for sure.
Magic's in the air.
That's, it was. It was magic in the air because it's like reality seemed to be loose that day. And to, even the police were enjoying it, you know? And, you know, it was a good time, man. And, you know, I mean, but I've had a few more, but I don't know if you guys want me to tell those either, man. I don't know.
Well, we've got some content we need to get into tonight. So, so to go through that, Carrie and I picked out a couple of really cool tracks. So we played Honey for the Bills first, and we're getting ready to play Heartbreak on a Hopeless Moon here in a second. And we're going to finish out strong with the end because, you know, that's appropriate. But if you're listening, feel free, and you like what you hear, feel free to navigate on over to, you can find Sorrows Lords on Twitter, freaking Reverb Nation, SorrowsLords.net, Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr. You can find them on Spotify. Literally, if you type Sorrows Lords into Google, Google will spit out everything you need to know. So by all means, hit them up on everything and anything. Go ahead and give them a listen. Reach out to them and let us know that you thought their music was the coolest thing since sliced bread. Leave us a comment on Facebook. Leave them a comment on Facebook. Let us know what you think. And with that, let's go ahead and get into our actual intro. Ready to get into our main topic tonight. Welcome back, everyone. Once again, we are joined by Jamie and Morgan of the Sorrows Lords. Our topic tonight is famous people in the paranormal, and with that, let's get it on.
So our first story of the night comes to us courtesy of legendary actor Dan Aykroyd. In an interview with Esquire, the creator and star of Ghostbusters revealed that he has lived in multiple haunted houses and actually had several experiences with spirits. He says, "I saw things moving around on our counter and doors opening and closing. The staff also had experiences, direct contact in terms of tactile touching, and then turning around and there's no one there. Somebody crawled into bed with me once," he said.
So are we saying that Dan Aykroyd... that scene in Ghostbusters, that was sort of a reenactment of him sort of, you know, getting freaky?
Yeah, just real awkward.
I mean, you gotta get it how you can, I guess.
Oh, surprise.
Yeah. Well, he says, I was alone in the house and decided to take a nap. I closed the door to the bedroom, but didn't lock it. I woke up in this kind of trance where you don't know whether you're sleeping or not. It's what the abductee feels like when he's been taken. I saw the door open and I rolled over and looked at the bed and I saw the depression in the mattress, like somebody was getting in there, and I thought, I'm just going to roll over and snuggle up next to it.
Well, I mean, what else can you do? Just aggressive hugging. Let's do it.
I mean, I have several things that you could do that would not be aggressive hugging.
So apparently these experiences and his reading of the research of Hans Holzer led to the writing of Ghostbusters. I have to say there was a surprising number of people claiming to have been intimate with the spirit in the stories I was reading while I was researching this episode.
I mean, how do you?
Well, what I want to know is, like, is ghost sex cheating? Like, is that a thing? What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, there's no evidence, so
traditionally, I think that cheating with the ghost is, I think sex with a ghost is cheating, but I don't think masturbating about ghosts is cheating. So, I think it all depends on where the ectoplasm ends up, you know?
Well, at least they can't get pregnant, so that's a bonus.
Well, that alone, that's a religious topic. I mean, because technically, sometimes ghosts do get people pregnant, and I don't want to get into it, man, but yeah.
And is there a safe word in everything, or what?
Bananas.
Ooh!
Yeah.
The safe word is boo.
Yeah.
That is incredible. That is fucking nuts. So the next story we have is about the alluring Allison Hannigan from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. If you don't know, she was the redheaded fantasy of every nerd's dreams circa 2002-2003. Allison claims that she lived in a haunted house around 2003, but that she really didn't mind. She said at the time, I have a ghost in my house. I saw him a couple of months ago. I don't think he died there because there's a law in LA that when you buy a house, if somebody has died there, they have to disclose that. And nobody did. So I don't know why he's there, but he's very friendly. My friend saw him first one night. She said, I don't want to alarm you, but I just saw a man follow us out of the house. And I said, well, at least he's gentlemanly. He let us go first. I feel like saying at that point in time, I don't mean to alarm you, that's the appropriate time to alarm someone. Like, what do you mean you don't mean to alarm someone? Like, no,
I don't
want to
freak you out, but there's a dude that just followed us at the house, and he's not there anymore, so.
I mean, we don't know that he's not there until we check.
Thank you so much.
I say no cause for alarm, you know?
I mean, I'll stab somebody for less, so.
Okay.
She's done it.
That's Pittsburgh, or that's Virginia, yeah. And Pittsburgh,
yeah,
by the
Virginia.
Way.
I mean, you
not
live in
Detroit.
Detroit.
Yeah, not anymore. Yeah, there's,
okay.
I haven't been stabbed in years, to be honest with you, man. It was north of 8 Mile, too, so. Yeah.
Allison said that wasn't actually the last time that she saw the spirit. She continues to say, later that night, I saw the silhouette of a man standing in the bathroom doorway. I was like, sweetie, what are you doing? I thought it was my fiancé, Alexis. What kind of a dude is named Alexis? But then I looked and Alexis was asleep next to me. I'd love to get his name. I'm thinking of putting a little chalkboard where I think he lives to see if he'll write his name down. Here.
I mean, Alexis is the name of a man with a huge cock.
True.
I'm saying what?
Or a beautiful lady.
Beautiful lady, but it's a man. Now I gotta look up and see who her freaking fiance was.
Oh, he was on. He's an actor, Alexis Denisov.
Okay.
Okay, so he's non-threatening. So I guess if I saw him in my doorway, I wouldn't be threatening. Yeah.
It depends
about to
on
get,
where you meet him. Yeah.
About to get gay. Yeah.
They say he'll stab you for the last slice of pizza. Detroit style. Yeah.
I mean he can fight back for it.
I think I could take him in a fight.
It's going down for real.
Elbow drop?
I don't think that man stands a chance.
So now we move on to singer Demi Lovato, who says she saw her first ghost when she was only 8 years old. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
She said, "I totally believe in ghosts. I saw a little girl. She was dressed like she was from the 1800s and was just standing in my closet." In 2013, she told BuzzFeed, "I go ghost hunting. My house in Texas is so ridiculously haunted, not by a bad spirit, but by a little girl. I think her name is Emily. I've had a medium come over and ghost hunters, and they both told me the same name, Emily. There were so many times that I saw her when I was growing up. I saw her in my closet one time. When I was three years old, my mom caught me talking to something by myself. She asked, 'Who are you talking to?' And I said, 'My best friend, Emily. She's playful. She'd probably be around 11 or 12 years old, maybe younger.'" One of my So this is also Demi Lovato speaking. "One of my friends, Tucker, came over one time and he asked, 'So your house is haunted?' I said, 'Yeah, just watch. Something will happen. Something always happens.' We started to watch a movie when all of a sudden a laptop in my kitchen started to play a video as well. It was a black screen before, so it was a question of who turned it on and hit play. And after that, Tucker texted a friend saying, 'I think this house is haunted. A movie just turned on by itself,' and there was a glitch in his phone that kept texting him back the word 'definitely' over and over again. That happened about 30 times. There was another time when my uncle was in the living room watching TV, and a balloon came down the stairs and turned around on the banister. I have a crazy footage of just orbs flying through the air. It's crazy stuff." Now, I am leery about orbs. Freaking orbs, man.
Orbs.
Yeah.
So
I remember when orbs. Oh.
No, go ahead.
No, go for it.
I remember when orbs were first coming into the paranormal, and they were also there with like this idea of like tubes, and that they were floating in the atmosphere, and all the time, and it was reminiscent of the old H.P. Lovecraft story. I can't remember the, but it could be The Color Out of Space, where he develops a strange mechanism to excite the appendix to the point where you can see into another reality. So that's what I think about when I think of orbs, man.
Yeah, I don't know if orbs are people or its own thing. But I do feel that like the different color orbs will depict certain elemental factors of the orb or thing it's representing.
Well, I guess the overarching theory is supposed to be that it's the easiest, like a ball, a sphere, it would be the easiest form for something to take.
Well, it is perfect all around, you know, from a geometric point of view, you know.
Guess what? I guess we'll figure it out when we leave this ethereal plane.
Yeah.
I'm leery of orbs because there can be so many false positives. So when you're on an investigation, I mean, there can be bugs, there can be lens flares, there can be dust in the air, there can be so many different things. And so I would say that 95% of the orbs, quote unquote orbs that you get in photos and stuff like that, is more than likely not going to be something. So for me, for an orb, it would need to be like a video, and I would need to see not only the entirety of the orb, but also the orb's behavior. Does it behave like a bug?
Yeah.
Does it behave like dust? You know? Like there's a lot that goes into figuring out if an orb is legit or not.
I think you're very right, but
even when you say 95%, for me, even it's just 0.1% of orbs, the photographic evidence isn't very appealing or provocative. It's more, I kind of think it's more like the metaphysical evidence is what appeals to me, as if the orbs just exist in a completely different reality and don't care anything about us, and we just see them sometime, you know?
I gotta say, I want to get a FLIR and just start walking around trying to catch orbs.
Have you ever seen orbs? I have flown in a plane twice. I'm sure in the Air Force, you've probably flown a few times. I mean, have you ever seen anything? Orbish up there. Have you seen anything like that?
Not that I can recall. Granted, when it's duty related, white planes I've flown in was like a C-130 where all I saw was just like the horde of people in front of me or
just
a C-17
and heads.
So
are they still flying the C-130, man?
Oh yeah, they're they're abundant.
And they're supposed to be the plane that some people believe was the basis for the plane for certain alien overlords that should remain nameless, flew souls into a volcano and exploded. Am I right?
Oh, are we talking about Xenu?
I think we shouldn't, but I mean, Isn't that the C-130?
That is a portion of that lore that I am not familiar with, but now you have piqued my curiosity.
Please look it up, sir, because I think you might have been on the very plane that flew Jesus into a volcano, man, you know? So, yeah.
That will be how I introduce myself from now on, if that is the case.
Yeah, man.
Oh, Demi Lovato. That's where we are. We're in Demi Lovato. Okay, so...
Well... She's a lovely woman. I've never met her, but I've seen a lot of her, you know?
Oh, God.
She is not a tomato, but she is a diva, as far as I know, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yes, she is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Jamie's next. It's time to pop that podcast cherry. Let's go.
Thanks. Well, at the peak of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle fame, the Sherlock Holmes author became heavily involved in the paranormal and the spiritualist movement. And he believed in ghosts, wrote books about the spiritualism and fairies, and attended seances, which is pretty sweet. Although he didn't believe to possess supernatural powers himself, in his 1930 book, The Edge of the Unknown, he did describe several chance brushes he had with spirits. In one incident, Doyle described waking up with the clear consciousness that there was someone in the room and that the presence was not of this world. He said his body was paralyzed, but he could still hear footsteps echoing across the room. Then, he said, he sensed a presence leaning over him and heard him whisper, "Doyle, I come to tell you that I am sorry." Moments later, the mysterious visitor vanished, and Sir Arthur's body unfroze. Doyle's wife slept through the entire thing, but he was convinced that experience wasn't a dream. He believed that the ghost to be a certain individual to whom I had tried to give psychic consolation when he was bereaved. The man had turned down Doyle's offer with some contempt and died himself shortly afterwards. It may well be that he wished to express regret. Doyle also wrote, as for his sleep paralysis, the author believed that the spirit needed to borrow power from a living person to appear in the physical world, and it had chosen him. Perhaps the spirit he was referring to was his old frenemy, Harry Houdini, who had died in 1926.
I love the phrase frenemy. Just to think Harry Houdini is coming back to visit his buddy. But that's interesting to think that, like, because you hear about that all the time where people say, like, when they interact with the spirit. They're like, they're frozen. So like they can't move or anything like that. But to have like the theory of like they're sucking energy from you so that they can appear to you.
Well, you know, that's if you look at the ancient, you know, Homer, or the Greek myths, right? The ghosts in the underworld had to drink the blood of human beings to be able to talk. You know, so it's a theme that actually goes out pretty far, man.
That's a pantheon that I am that's probably least familiar to me, but that is interesting. That piques my interest.
When he goes down, Odysseus, I believe, goes down to the realm of the dead and has to talk to a specific dead man to find out how to get home again, to be with his wife and his child, and he has to fill a cup with his own blood and put it on the ground, and various spirits of famous people appear out of, you know, they crowd around the blood to drink it, and it's a bit of a feeding frenzy.
That's it. We're doing that from Paranormal Investigations now on. We're putting blood in a cup and saying, come drink
please
this.
Please do not, yeah.
Come drink
just
it and
drink it. Alone. You guys are going to go under, man. You got to keep it above on the red, man. Yeah. And, of course, Doyle, I think he was famously a believer, like you guys, like Jamie mentioned, of the Cottingham fairies. Have you guys seen those pictures?
Yeah. I think that kind of the two girls that took them eventually admitted that all except one of them were fakes, but they're amazingly beautiful photographs.
Yeah. They remind me of spiritualist photographs of the era where you know that photographic manipulation is there, but they're almost like works of art anyway, and they've almost created their own reality in and of themselves. So I give them respect, you know. Those little girls were crafty, man, you know?
Yeah,
compelling pictures.
Insanely amazing accomplishment, like, for two little girls to have done that. Like, I couldn't even begin to figure out how to stage something like that.
It's the eyes of a child through a camera, you know, with that weird era of photography where you couldn't tell for the real from the fake, you know?
And another interesting fact that his friend of me is Harry Houdini. It's very interesting because he actually died in Detroit.
Yeah, Houdini died in Detroit, and they say that he was punched in the belly and that it ruptured his appendix, although now some people believe that he was actually murdered, so the story might be getting interesting. Who knows? Yeah.
I think we need to reopen this case.
There is some evidence that he might have been a spy.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Houdini was a spy. Aleister Crowley was a spy.
Famous
spy. You know what? Who now? Crowley was a power bottom.
Oh, power bottom of the century.
Oh, yeah.
Like
my
anything.
Dad is like super into Houdini and Crowley.
Oh, yeah.
Crowley shows up everywhere.
Yeah, Crowley. That's why the whole goal of the OTO is to make yourself immortal, and which I think everybody is anyway, but it's a different topic. But and I believe Aleister Crowley succeeded in creating his own religion. I think certain sea captains have done the same thing, but we shouldn't talk about them, you know?
Certain sea captains.
Well, that's all we can say. That's it. That's
Hashtag Sea Org.
Hubbard?
Oh, my God. They're knocking on my
trust
door
me.
Right now.
I have a wealth of useless knowledge when it comes to that subject.
Me too. You know, what's interesting is that some aspects of certain theologies, certain naval theologies, are actually, they were in the new Thor Ragnarok movie, which is a great movie, and Disney's not paying for this radio show at all, so, you know.
But
we wish
if
they were.
They want to, they can.
Yeah, they know this email address. Yeah.
We will promote any movie that they want. We'll
just give me some of that sweet Mickey money, man.
That's great.
Be part of the club.
That's great, for sure. So I actually think it's really intriguing that you guys brought out that Houdini might be a spy, and I just wanted to say, but I didn't want to interrupt, that that would be in keeping with spies of that era, so like Mata Hari, who was obviously a famous entertainer, and she was also used as a spy, up until World War II. I mean, pretty interesting stuff.
Some people say that many of Houdini's shows, he would actually, one of the things was that he would actually, during disappearing acts, go commit acts of espionage. He notoriously informed the proto-CIA, I think the OSS. No, he was dead before that, so I don't know who he informed, but on types of invisible ink, you know? Like, yeah, he was a magician, man. And it's likely, sadly enough, that maybe David Copperfield is a spy, which is just, you know, that's a weird world to live in.
Chris Angel's the next one.
I think so. I think Chris Angel, yeah, I think so. I mean, he can produce hidden secret nuclear plans from his body, man. You know, just like that.
That's a whole history of remote viewing as well.
Yeah, I'm from the 90s era of Art Bell, where he used to have majorette dames on all the time, and I to some extent I've been involved in out of body experiences, and me and Jamie has a friend that kind of dabbles in remote viewing, and I believe that it exists without a doubt, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, we know a guy, Dennis, that does it too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Well, I think like people who like get who can do meditation, like proper meditation, like can experience like sort of that out of body to where you almost feel sort of, I guess, an overwhelming feel of zen, I guess, if you want to use that terminology, to where you can project yourself, your astral form.
Yeah. I think when you look at it, the basis for a lot of these strange ideas is that reality isn't completely real, and that in some ways a person that could enter those meditative states might be able to exist at multiple places at once, at least on a consciousness level, you know, which, you know, I mean, that's fun, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like it feels, I don't know, whenever I feel like I lucid dream myself, so every time I'm in a lucid dream, it just feels like you're like in a giant, like watery pool that you can kind of do whatever you want. That's what it feels like to me. Like you fly around, you can just, the only thing that's weird is like contemplating knowledge, because it's almost like the knowledge you seek in a lucid dream is the answer you're going to give yourself anyways. I don't know if that makes any sense to you guys.
That could be true. Yeah. If in essence a dream is entirely contained within yourself, then the answer that you would get from that dream would be from within yourself. But if some aspects of dreams are communication, then potentially such an answer could come from without, you know, so... Like, but dreaming is fun. It's addictive. Yeah.
Yeah, I truly enjoy it. I'm a lucid dreamer, and that's how I do a lot of my like planning, which is crazy to think about. But that's legitimately how I plan things out for like important presentations and stuff like that. That's always the best way for me to do it.
Yeah, I understand completely what you're saying, because I find like a lot of the kind of day-to-day moral debates and life and things like that, I kind of enter into in lucid dreams. And so it's like you have a second life beyond the veil of sleep, you know, where you can just kind of mentally experiment. And I think it's great, you know.
Yep, agree. Couldn't agree more. Well, we have actually come to the end of our episode, and I hate to end it, but we have exhausted our hour. And guys, you have been absolutely amazing. We would love to have you.
Thank you.
Honestly,
thank you so much. You guys are awesome.
Yeah,
oh,
you guys
awesome.
Are really. We'd love to come back anytime, and we have a lot of friends that would like to also even talk about stuff. And in Detroit, we're part of an art space too that's going to be involved in experimenting with the paranormal. And we'd love to come back on the show at a later date or any time and talk to you guys some more, man.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Give us, like,
yeah, that'd be awesome.
So we can send, like, stickers. Yeah, give us your address so we can send stickers and posters. And anybody listening out there, the first person to say, hey, what's up? We listen to the show. Send you a free shirt. Say what's up.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
There you go.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, like I said, give them a like on their Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, you name it, they got it. So go ahead and hit them up, SROS Lords. And we are going to finish out real strong with the end. So everybody have a great week, and we will talk to you guys again next week.
Peace out.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.